bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Go on, take the money and run. Go on, take the money and run.
Go on, that's, to me, the new education plan. Let's see how much money we can get out of the schools and put into the hands of the profiteers. How much money we can give to the DeVosses who have spent tons of money on their agenda to privatize and profitize our public schools. And hey, while they're at it, and this is one of those little fun facts that I love to throw to some of my my friends who are still on the edge of going, well, Trump's not going to be horrible. Betsy DeVos, who's now the head of the education department, a department most Republicans want to do away with and will use as a bludgeon over the head of the rest of us. Her cousin is an interesting little figure. A guy who ran a mercenary outfit in Iraq. You may remember Blackwater. Christian mercenaries and education. That's our future. Anyway, here to talk about education and policy and the things that he sees in his school. I've asked Jamal Bowman to come talk with us. He's a principal in the Bronx. He is the founding principal of the Cornerstone Academy for Social Action Middle School. Jamal, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
So I look at, you know, this latest, you know, I look at DeVos. I look at all of these arrows that are pointing us in a direction that it looks like the target is on backs of folks like you and your schools.
Yeah, that's the way it's looking. Obviously, this is the perfect time, the opportune time to resist, to mobilize, to organize with different coalitions out there that are fighting for justice, not just education justice, but immigration justice, LGBT justice, and just fighting for our democracy and organizing with people who care about the future of our country. So on the one hand, you know, we have to be on guard and protective of what we have. But on the other hand, we also have to be on the offensive in fighting and building what we know is best for our kids.
But here's the thing that bothers me, and you as a principal, I'm sure, deal with this on a regular basis. We're fed this frame quite often that there are bad, failing schools and that immediately we've got to do something and we need radical change, something like what DeVos is going to bring. I keep hearing this over and over and over again, but I don't see a lot of push to go, well, what exactly makes a failing school if they are out there and how should we fix those as opposed to chucking the whole system?
Yeah, it's interesting. We never talk about inequality. We never talk about inequity. We never talk about America's ugly history of discrimination and oppression based on race and class and gender and so forth. These are the underlying factors that lead to the struggles in schools and communities. But we don't talk about that on a national level. What we do is we implement standardized tests that are, you know, have a long history going back to IQ tests, going back to social Darwinism and the eugenics movement, have a long history of segregating and tracking different people based on so-called intelligence. And unfortunately, these tests continue to be used as a weapon to support a narrative that's false and to support privatization of public schools and communities. So, you know, it's about power, it's about control, and it's about manipulation. It's not about truth. So it's about time for us as practitioners, as those on the front line, if you will, to come together and fight and push back.
Are you surprised that the experiments, that all of the silver bullets seem to be aimed at fixing communities of color and really fixing communities of high poverty first before they move on to the rest of us?
Well, not really. I mean, when you look at high poverty communities, they're disproportionately black and brown. And we can see from what's happening with brown people, whether they're Muslim or Latino immigrants, and there's immigration enforcement that's happening all over the country. And when you look at African Americans' history in this country as slaves and as segregated, isolated, marginalized peoples, it doesn't surprise me. Because black and brown communities continue to be under attack from, you know, whether it's government officials doing a bidding of the corporatocracy. It doesn't surprise me. that they continue to distract us with silver bullets and keep us distorted so that we can't organize and come up with plans. And let me just emphasize, this is not just a black and brown issue. Poor whites are under attack and under the gun as well. They've been dealing with this as well for quite some time, since indentured servitude. So it's time to come together, man. It's time to come together and fight back.
Yeah, I mean, because I grew up as a white kid in a predominantly black housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And I remember, you know, the 70s where busing was all the rage. So we took poor kids from one side of the city of Cleveland, we put them on these yellow boxes, shipped them to another poor community on the other side, and really we just shifted poor people around instead of saying, how do we get the resources into those schools? How do we make sure that their parents have jobs? How do we make sure that the things that we know that they need, they get? Instead, it was about just shuffling people around.
Yeah, I mean, communities need jobs and job training, right? And we as leaders, whether it's elected officials or others, have to take a holistic approach, a holistic view of developing children, developing people, and developing communities. Instead, we put Band-Aids on situations and come up with the next, you know, like you mentioned, silver bullet to solve, you know, all the problems in public ed. And the fact is, we haven't put everyone to the table. So many of these policies are created by corporate actors and politicians alone, without educators, without parents, without students. We need to bring everyone to the table and take our time to discuss holistically what our communities and what our kids need.
I agree. But, you know, I go back to the 70s and the busing thing. I could at least make somewhat of an argument of saying, well, you know, by having a certain mix, maybe we could, you know, begin to move forward as all communities. And there was some educational thoughts that went into this. This privatization stuff scares me much more, because it doesn't seem to me about educating or helping poor kids. It seems to be more about profiting off of them.
It's about making money. It's about making money in the short and long run. In the short run, there are laws in place now where if a hedge fund manager or someone with wealth invest in public schools or charter schools, they can double their money within a 7-year period. So in the short run, they're making a ton of money. In the long run, they're creating efficient workers within a standardized system to keep the economy going, to keep this economy going, which continues to favor those in wealthy positions and continues to facilitate the economic divide. So it's a win-win financially from the perspective of those who already have all the power.
Right. So basically you're saying the old George Carlin line of, they want people just smart enough to push the buttons and shuffle the paper, but not smart enough to ask why.
Absolutely. Not smart enough to ask why, not smart enough to critically think, not smart enough to create their own businesses and become entrepreneurs and build their own communities. We are now economically and cognitively enslaved. The masses are. The masses are cognitively enslaved, and we work for the corporate master who's in control of all of us.
Now, what do you say to somebody who goes, you know, that's inflammatory language, we're enslaved by the master, and it has a lot of racial overtones? Because I have a lot of friends who go, well, you know, that charter stuff, school stuff, that's, you know, that's the inner cities, because, well, they need to try some different things. And I keep saying, wait, as soon as they take over the inner cities, they're coming for you.
Well, when you standardize, so we have standardized tests, right, that students and teachers and schools and districts are measured by.
Right.
And that's followed by a standardized curriculum that teachers are forced to teach. And that's followed by standardized teaching practices that students are forced to follow. So when everyone is forced to follow a particular regimen and they don't have freedom and they don't have choice and they don't have autonomy, I call that enslavement. Right?
Right.
So even though enslavement has historical ramifications and racial undertones, we're not talking about enslavement from a racial perspective. We're talking about enslavement from a human perspective. We are blessed with unalienable rights as U.S. citizens, and those rights have been taken away when you look at how public education policy has been implemented over the last two decades or so.
Now, you as a principal, it's your job, as I understand, to make sure your teachers stay on track. And that isn't that all part of the whole system? Because, you know, most of the parents I talk to, they don't like the standardized test system. In fact, we've opted our kids out of them. A lot of people are concerned that we're only teaching to the test. So what do we as parents, what do citizens do? Because we're heading down this road. We're well down it. What do we do?
Well, citizens refuse the test. Parents have the right to refuse the standardized test. They have the right to opt their children out of the standardized test and drain the state of the data. So they don't have the data to rank and sort and control the masses. As a principal, my job, first and foremost, is to educate children. And in doing so, I have to make sure I do no harm. So I'm not going to give my students content or tests that are going to be harmful to their psychological, emotional, social, and cognitive well-being. So first and foremost, I need to educate children, meet them where they are, listen to them, understand their needs in a very implicit, tacit way, being of and from their community, and make sure those needs are met, and make sure I support my teachers in meeting the child's needs and working with parents and figuring out how best to do that. So that's my job. I work for the children, I work for the parents, I work for their families before I work for the state or someone on Wall Street.
So basically you're talking about the school being the center of the community. And for me, what I see happening, instead of that neighborhood school, it looks like we're turning them into, you know, just the latest industrial craze, which all seem to be this cyber charter school stuff that really, they're at least here in Pennsylvania, they're pushing heavily.
I mean, Citizens United, right? So now we have laws in place that allow those who are running for office to spend as much money as they want, right? What is it called? Mortgage-backed securities, right? So that came along, and we allowed Wall Street to get involved in real estate, and they crashed the market in 2008, and millions of people lost their retirement, right? So now we have corporate involvement in public education. So this is about hedge fund portfolios. This is about offers with wealth. This is not about children. So it's the Wild West. It's market-based theory. It's every man and woman for themselves, and may the best person win. And it's the total wrong approach to education, and I think it's the wrong approach from an economic perspective, in my opinion. So we got to do better.
Now, in the long term, it's a disaster for the economy. It's a disaster for we the people. But for right now, the here and today, it's for the 1%, the people, the DeVoses of the world, this is gold.
Yeah, the 0.01%. Yeah, they're in heaven. They're in luxury. The organization like ALEC, which is comprised of corporate actors, think tanks, and others. They have infiltrated our local and national politics for the last 40 years to create policies that benefit the market, that benefit corporations, and that benefit wealthy individuals. And now they've taken over the White House. Donald Trump and his cabinet are all billionaires who support this ideology. So that's what's in place, and that's what we're up against. And now more than ever, it's time for the people, black, white, red, yellow, or green, as my father used to say, to come together and push back against everything that's anti-American and everything that's anti-democracy, and market-based theory is anti-democracy.
Yeah, I mean, all of the invisible hand stuff that we keep being told, the invisible hand of the market will take care of it, all of that stuff. To be honest, anything the American Legislative Exchange Council pushes is poison for working people, and also their sister child or their little brother, whatever you want to call it, the American City County Exchange, ACCE, mm-hmm. They're just as bad as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I hadn't heard of the ACCE until you just mentioned them, but I will definitely go and look them up. And when you talk about the unseen hand, I mean, we're only aware of ALEC because of leaked documents.
Yep.
I mean, they were trying to keep this thing covert for a long period of time. Let me also say, listen, capitalism, unfortunately, it's out of control now, and there are many evils that are a part of it that's hurting many people. But listen, I'm not against someone, starting a company, building their own wealth and living a life of luxury to a certain extent.
Nobody is.
The problem is it's out of control.
Yep.
Any system in which you have disproportionate poverty, where you have 30% of children growing up in poverty, is a flawed system. And in America, the richest country in the world, it's an embarrassment. It's unacceptable.
No, and here's the thing, and this is where I come from is very simple. Look, I grew up in what I term as abject poverty, American style, not abject poverty, global style. That's completely
other
animal.
Different. Yep.
But, you know, we were dirt poor. That was what it was. And I have now, through a number of mechanisms, government programs that helped me live as a child, but put food on the table and a roof over our head, I have now moved into a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers. And you can thank the government helping educate me and give me an opportunity to live through health care once and some other stuff. And my union that made sure that the work that I did was compensated fairly. You know, there was a path towards the middle class. I fear that if I were born today into that situation, that prison would be my only option.
Yeah, I have that fear as well. And what you just made a very important point. The government stepped in to support our low-income and poverty-stricken families. What I see happening now is government officials are conspiring with the corporatocracy to further suppress and oppress our poor and poverty-stricken families. So that's a dangerous space. So we have less resources in certain communities. And DeVos, her agenda, based on her what she's done in Michigan, is to defund public schools, is to take Title I funding from public schools and invest it into vouchers, which allows parents choice, quote-unquote choice, which is a false choice, to enter into a charter or private or Catholic situation. And this is not additional money generated from the economy. This is money taken from public schools. If they wanted to do that with their own money, with other funds, fine. But you're taking money from public schools, so now you're starving an institution that has already been starved for a number of years.
And, you know, as I've been saying, you know, I've said this on the program before, I remember the school was the center of the community there. In the summertime, we would go and there would be a lunch program. It was probably the only hot lunch kids got all day in that neighborhood. They got it from the public school. They went there to, you know, to learn things over the summer. They had activities and stuff to keep people occupied. And I remember Ronald Reagan coming into office and doing away with all of that stuff. Ketchup is a vegetable and all of that nonsense.
That's right. And the only good thing that came from Ronald Reagan was the hip-hop generation. You had this community with their backs against the wall, forced to create something that transformed their neighborhood, and that worked. To your point, though, I mean, schools are the heartbeat of the community. They're the lifeblood of the community. In my opinion, schools should be open 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and offer all kinds of programming, whether it's job training, whether it's GED programming, whether it's mental health services, whether it's sports, the arts, theaters, academic. The school is the place where all this stuff can happen, and it should be the most amazing and safe space for kids. And that's what we need to invest in. If we really want to support low-income families and children, that's how we will begin to treat our schools.
I agree, and that's where parents learn literacy skills and other
that's
stuff.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, here's the thing. How's the kid going to read if the parents can't? Because, look,
that's
we've
right.
had school system. Our schools has, look, there have been some who have been left behind in this. And
Absolutely.
And I would argue on purpose for simply the fact that we can go then and say, well, we've got to get those failing schools, Jamal. We got to get rid of them.
Inequality has been facilitated throughout American history, all because of xenophobia and racism and self-preservation, and is continuing with what's happening in public education right now.
Right.
I mean, one of the biggest problems is segregation. You talked earlier about having to take a bus 45 minutes to another town just to integrate schools. If our communities were integrated, we wouldn't have to integrate schools because the neighborhood school would be integrated, right? So this fear of living amongst people who are different, we need to get over that. I mean, all human beings have amazing cultural experiences and gifts to share with each other, and we really need to be integrated in terms of our mindset and our communities and begin to share our amazing talents with each other and really build our democracy and reach its ideals in that way.
And for me, the only way that happens, honestly, is you can't force it. It has to be something that's done through economics. And for me, as a labor guy,
The way you get to that point is you make sure that all jobs are living wage jobs and that all people have access to living wage jobs. If you really want to push right to work, make sure that there are some rights and some actual work attached to it.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And the way to get that going is through leadership. We need true leadership that cares about people, that's going to galvanize people around the ideals of our country and the ideals of our democracy. And I agree with you 100% in terms of living wage jobs. Absolutely.
Last thing, you know, what's the marching order? What do we want to be doing from this point forward? We know all the problems. We've heard all of our ideas. What's the one action tomorrow we take?
Well, the marching order is be relentless. And what I mean by that is learn all you can, engage with others who are different than you, call elected officials, write letters, meet with them, because it is us that hold them accountable. This is a country of, for, and by the people, and it's our job as the people to engage, be active citizens, and be relentless. That's the only way we're going to turn this around.
There you go. Jamal, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much. Great talking with you.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, Jamal Bowman. He is the founding principal of the Cornerstone Academy for Social Action Middle School. We'll get a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. You can check out Jamal Bowman's website. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.